On today's episode, we're going to take you through some of the best performances of the last week. We'll cover some big injury news, what to do with top players off to terrible starts, streamers, and our favorite buy low and sell high players so far this season. That's today on Fastball Fantasy Baseball. I'm Taylor Tarter, and this is Fastball Fantasy Baseball. Let's get into it. Let's take a quick look at some of the players who had the best week five. Texas outfielder Adolis Garcia went 13 for 28 last week. That's a 464 batting average for the week. Six runs, four home runs, 12 RBI, which is really nice. Underneath everything, he has a 5% walk rate and a 30% K rate. Those are not great. Last week drove his home run to fly ball rate up to 32%. The highest he had in the minors was 18%. So that pace of home runs is definitely unrealistic. He is clobbering the ball, though. He has an 18% barrel rate, 52% hard hit rate, and 42% hard contact, which are all very, very good contact metrics. There are definite problems. He has a 38% chase rate, 71% overall contact rate, and a 15% swing and strike rate. So what you get with Garcia is a really undisciplined power hitter that also doesn't walk a lot. So not really a great guy for points leagues. He could be good for Roto. He's a guy for me that is definitely a ride the hot streak type of guy. I think the 297 batting average on the season so far is a fluke. I think he probably finishes closer to 230, but with good power. I would say add him, but be careful of who you drop. You know, there's guys like Blackman and Kyle Tucker who are outfielders that are not doing that great right now, but I would rather have those guys than Garcia. Another guy that had a really good week that we're going to talk about a little bit later too is Waskari Noah, the Atlanta starting pitcher. He was on fire last week, 10 strikeouts, 13 innings pitched. He had two quality starts, which were also two wins. He's got a 0.69 ERA. Nice. And a 0.85 whip. Now, it was a decent amount of strikeouts so far this season, 9.8 strikeouts per nine. He's limiting walks. He's getting unlucky with the home runs. Giving up one and a third home runs per nine innings and a 20% home run to fly ball rate. Those are kind of signs of bad luck, you know, a little misfortune in the home run department. The fastball slider combo is doing really well for him, but we're going to talk about the problems later. So I'm going to skip over some of the problems now. One of the things that worries me is that he's never pitched more than 91 innings. And so to me, that's a guy who's probably going to be in the bullpen towards the end of the season, maybe end of July, August.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, I mean, you like the stuff, and I know we're going to talk about him later, but yeah, he's an exciting guy to watch. And, you know, if you own him currently, you must feel like you have like a diamond in the rough kind of thing. Oh, not yeah. To mention the guy could swing the bat, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll get back to him in a little bit, I guess, right?
So let's go ahead and we only have one quick update as far as COVID, but let's go ahead and get into that now.
Coronavirus!
One strange aspect of the COVID designation is that teams can and are being super unspecific about it. They're not giving up any details and they don't really have to, but that's kind of unfortunate for us because we want to know what's going on, right? And so Corbin Burnes missed the week and, you know, we don't know if he had COVID. We don't know if he was exposed to COVID. We don't know if he got the shot and was experiencing some side effects. Right. And all of those things might impact how we use him in his next start, right? If I knew he was out with COVID, I might be a little bit more worried regarding his, you know, his oncoming start.
Sure.
He should be back soon. Hopefully he gets back to what he was doing beforehand.
Yeah, but the problem, like, there are some leagues out there where you got to make these decisions early in the week, right? And you got to set your lineups. And in that case, you might want to err on the side of caution, you know, because you don't know. And if you got somebody that's worthy of your consideration to make a start next week and you got to choose between the two of them, I mean, personally, I'd probably go with the guy that you're pretty sure he's going to start versus Burns.
Yeah, this is very frustrating for weekly leagues. It's much easier. All the COVID stuff is much easier to manage in dailies. But yeah, like you said, I think you got to err on the side of caution when it comes to COVID designations and just assume, you know, either he's going to be out or you know, find somebody who you like in a matchup for the week that you can replace him with. So other than that, there's thankfully not that much COVID news this week, but there are tons of injury updates.
Ouch, baby. Very ouch.
So one thing, Matt, that you told me this week was that there are more people put on IL. There are more players put on IL this April than the previous two Aprils combined, which is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. And we have more. This is into May, but you know, it just seems like every week there's like five new guys that we have to, you know, figure out what to do with. So Jake DeGrom, he got pulled from a game last week. He had a MRI Monday that showed no structural issues, which is good, but he's got some kind of like strain around his lat, probably because he's throwing so hard. And you know, that's something that worries me a little bit going forwards about his body holding up to what he's doing. What are your thoughts here? Are you worried at all, or are you just?
I mean, you can't help but like have these flashbacks of Lindstrom, right? In that kind of body prototype where a guy just throws so hard and you're kind of shocked, and how is he generating it and what does it cost? You know, so, I mean, I'm less concerned about DeGrom. I think, you know, in the end, you know, hopefully give him a little bit of a break and let him heal up. But I tend to lean more towards he's going to be okay.
So you wouldn't be, a worried person trying to like ship him away?
No, I think that when this guy pitches and you have like the best pitcher on the planet when he's throwing. And I mean, right now the concerns aren't so great to me that I would want to give that up.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm on board with that. You got to hold on, and you know, be patient and not freak out.
Yeah.
One person I am actually a little bit worried about though is Christian Yelich. He's back on the IL again for his back. He came back for one game, and the strain, whatever he's got going on with his back, kept him out again. He's playing catch now, but he's not hitting. I have him in a league and I'm trying to shop him. I still think the return should be at least a top 30 or 40 player. I don't think you can reasonably get better than that right now. If you had him, would you be looking for a trade partner?
You know, this is the first time I've felt actually concerned about Yelich. Because this whole time I've been by Yelich. Get him. Go get him now, because this is perennial MVP candidate. And you're getting him at a discount. Now I'm in the middle territory. You know, I still lean towards buying him, but I'm not nearly as confident as I have been. So these, you know, back injuries are always of a great concern, as we've mentioned before. but I still think I'm leaning towards buying him. And if you're trying to rebuild and you have Yelich, maybe you're dealing Yelich for two younger guys that have high upside. you know, to kind of spread out throughout the lineup. But yeah, there's more concern than ever for me.
A couple guys have fractured thumbs. Joey Votto, he's going to be out about a month with the fractured thumb. And Roberto Perez, he also has a fractured thumb. Catcher's already a thin position. And I'm assuming in most leagues, people who are listening, that Posey and Kelly are already gone in your leagues. So I would be looking for guys like Tucker Barnhart. He's had a couple good weeks here. Yadi is back from the IL. And then Yan Gomes is actually doing pretty decently well. He looks like a 250 hitter this year. And if I could get that out of him, I'd be happy. Of course, Byron Buxton. And, you know, it's bad. I don't want to be like, I told you so, you know, about an injury. But he had a grade 2 hip strain last week. The team has said he's going to be out weeks with this. And it's a bummer because he was doing so well. But this is why you don't get your hopes up with Byron Buxton.
Yeah, but this was the year. I mean, you were finally getting to see, like, what we all dreamed Byron Buxton would be. Oh, it's just it's so depressing.
And so Alex Kirilloff is also out. He's got a sprained wrist. He saw a specialist. He's taking swings, but he's still on the IL. And last week we talked about the Minnesota outfield and how kind of deep it was. And I was saying, I was worried that Kepler would, you know, get pushed out because he hasn't been doing well. Well, that's definitely turned around right now. He's getting playing time and is actually, you know, doing some good stuff with it in the last couple of days. So that situation's sort of shaking itself out. And then you have another outfielder, Juan Soto. He's had a weird shoulder injury. It was very unspecific what exactly he was dealing with. We didn't get a lot of information from the Nats. He's been in and out of games. There was a series against the Yankees where he was playing DH. His 7-day stats haven't been great in the last week. He's been definitely still, it seems like, affected by the injury, but he's a guy who's so good, and we still have, what, 4 months, 5 months of the season left. I think he's going to be fine.
Yeah.
So I'm not too worried about Soto here. And then, of course, tons of soft tissue injuries still. Last year, having the short year and, you know, all that ramp up, ramp down, it's definitely get into guys. You have Kike Hernandez is out with a hamstring strain. Wilson Ramos with a lumbar strain. DeGrom out with the lat. Diego Castillo, groin tightness. Springer out with a quad injury again.
Yeah.
Rafael Tolis, he's out with a calf injury. This is crazy. And now, what I would really like to see with Kike out is I would love to see a guy like Jaron Duran or Jeter Downs come up for Boston.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited to see those guys, but we'll see what happens with that.
You know what? My opinion here also is that even if there was no COVID or any ramifications of that, George Springer would still be on the IL no matter what. There's nothing that will change that.
Yeah. What do you do with him at this point? Cause like this is more trouble than I think he's really ever had. Like this is, you know, he's been out before, but not to this extent.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and it's just one thing after another.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it. I mean, if you own him, you've had him for the entirety of the year because you probably drafted him, right? I'm sure you've identified how to fill those holes at this point in your lineup because you've had to deal with it already so much this year. I mean, I think you just hold on to him because, you know, you've already dealt with it. And unless you can find somebody to buy him of a decent value, which I don't think is possible. at this
point. Yeah, I don't know what kind of value you would get for him.
I think what he gets once he finally returns from the injury and what he gives you is just going to blow every other option out of the water, because, you know, hopefully he does return to be healthy. But you're used to this if you own him already, and I'm sure that this has been plugged in your lineup.
Yeah, so we do actually have some good news regarding injuries. There are quite a few players who are coming back, close to coming back, or have come back in the last week. Ketel Marte is taking at bats. Chris Sale threw off a mound last week, and that's a big step. He's had a lot of setbacks coming back from Tommy John. And so to hear that he's throwing off a mound is really good news. I think it's still unlikely we'll see him until August or so, just because of how many setbacks he has. But again, good news for him. Jake Arrieta, who's been out with a thumb issue, he threw a bullpen session. He had a couple good starts of the season. Granted, they were not against great teams, but that's a situation to watch. Kyle Freeland pitched in a simulated game over the weekend, and Rockies teammate Brendan Rodgers has been taking at bats. And, you know, he's a guy a lot of people are excited about this season. So we'll see how that turns out. Jake Odorizzi, he threw a bullpen session. You got David Price throwing off a mound. The Dodgers have said Tony Gonsolin is about three-ish weeks away, and we talked about him last week as a possible replacement for Dustin May owners. Jazz Chisholm resumed baseball activities. He had a rehab assignment on Tuesday, so he should be back hopefully within the next week or so. And then Voit is now back. He went 0-3 on Tuesday, but we expect that to get better. You had Yadi return, which is good for players who need catchers. Yeah. And then your boy Framber Valdez, we got an update sometime in June.
Yes, some light at the end of this tunnel. How spoiled are we?
Yeah. So after the break here, we want to talk about a few of the top players here who are struggling this season and give some insight into what fantasy managers should do with them. And we'll get to that right after a word from our sponsor. All right, so what do we do with players, these top players, these guys who we drafted high, that are off to bad starts? And this is always a struggle for managers who roster these guys, who draft them high, maybe you traded for them preseason thinking they were going to be really good, and now they're not, right? What do you do? So Francisco Lindor has gotten off to a really horrible start for him, but he has a 205 BABIP, and so obviously that's a sign of some bad luck. Discipline is not an issue. His walk and strikeout rates are actually the best of his career. He's got the lowest chase rate and the second lowest swinging strike rate of his career, right? So again, it's not a discipline issue. What I have seen is his launch angle is down a little bit and his ground ball rate is up a lot. And so those are two things that are definitely connected to each other. The 20% soft contact rate is the highest soft contact rate he's had in his career. And the home run to fly ball rate is about 10% lower than normal. So I see him as somebody, if you roster him, you need to hang on to. I see him as a great buy low guy for a manager who's worried about him and maybe looking to unload him. There's positive regression coming. You know, these things are going to turn around and he's going to figure it out. I'm pretty confident about it.
Yeah. And, you know, like signing a huge contract and moving to a new city, particular city with like such high expectations and pressure, you know, this isn't too shocking to me. It's a tough adjustment to make for a guy like that. So I'm right there with you. If you can pry him away from a current owner, that's a good move. Then we should also talk about Freddie Freeman. had a pretty rough start to the year, right? But he's starting to come around in a pretty big way. I think two homers against the Phillies over the weekend. He was 3-for-3 on Sunday. I mean, honestly, if this is the worst version of Freddie Freeman that we can possibly have, then I think we should all be pretty happy, right? I mean, his ground ball rate hasn't been this high since 2011. So I'm confident that he'll make the necessary adjustments to bring that back to career norms. But, I mean, this is a guy you should feel pretty confident that he's going to be all right in the end.
Yeah, I agree, right? This is a 293 career hitter with a 198 BABIP right now.
Yeah.
You know, he's got great contact metrics across the board. Things are going to turn around. And he absolutely destroys NL East pitching.
Yeah.
So, like, just wait for some more games. Wait for some – he is a Nats killer, so wait for some more, you know, Atlanta-Nats matchups, and things are going to turn around.
Yeah. Another guy is Matt Chapman. Slow start was kind of an enigma to me. He's got a 306 BABIP, which is pretty good, and, you know, it's what we're used to seeing from him throughout his career. He's walking at a career high rate of 13.5%. So he's showing patience and discipline. But then you consider his absolutely putrid 0.176 ISO. He's got a sub 40% hard hit rate and the highest medium contact rate of his career. So it begins to make a little bit more sense. You could all maybe even say that he's been a little lucky to have been this bad, right? I mean, he probably should have been playing worse based off of these numbers.
Yeah, he's a guy where I'm going to worry about him less if the hard contact turns around. But the fact that, you know, it is so low and the medium contact is so high, it is troubling to me. And when you strike out a third of the time, you know, that's going to limit your production anyways.
Yeah.
So I am a little worried about him. One player I feel very passionately about is Marcell Ozuna. So 2017 Ozuna, right? This is what everyone thinks about. This is the Marcell Ozuna that everyone thinks he is, right? Uh-huh. 37 home run, 93 run, 124 RBI, 312 batting average, right? That's what everybody thinks Marcell Ozuna is. Before or since then, he's never hit 30 home runs. He's never hit more than 80 runs, and he's never hit more than 90 RBI outside of that season, that one season. His best two seasons were 2017 and 2020. His BABIPs those years were 355 and 391, respectively. He's a career 316 BABIP hitter, right? His highest batting average outside of those two seasons where he had that super high BABIP is a 288 batting average. That's his best, right? Outside of those two seasons that were definitely BABIP driven. His 2020 hard contact rate was high, and his line drive rate definitely drove the BABIP up. It was also a small sample size in 2020. So it's hard to say, like, he's that hitter too, mm-hmm. right? But 2017 looks like it's totally, totally BABIP driven. And right now the 237 BABIP, despite good line drive numbers, is a little bit worrying. His problem is a 25% hard contact rate and a 37% hard hit rate. He is not making good contact right now at all, despite improved plate discipline numbers. So there are signs that he can improve, but I'm not buying him expecting 2020 or 2017 Marcell Ozuna. He's probably closer to every other season where he hit between 260 or 270 or so, 25 home runs, right? If I have him, I'm honestly worried that I'm you know, not going to get that much production out of him. And I would look for trade partners and see what I could get. And, you know, maybe there's somebody out there who thinks they're going to buy low on him. If I don't have him, I'm just totally fading him.
Yeah, that's some good research, Taylor. You nailed that.
Well, I just, like, I talk about him every year. He's on my no draft list every year for exactly these reasons.
Yeah.
Like, I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess we'll see, but it's hard to argue with all those numbers for sure. Another guy worth talking about is Lucas Giolito. Going back to his start against the Red Sox, I thought that it was just kind of a bump in the road. And granted, that was probably his rock bottom, but the results since then have not really been what we've come to expect with Giolito. His last three matchups were against very ideal opponents to pitch against, with Cleveland, Detroit, Kansas City. That was immediately after the Red Sox game. But in those games, he averaged less than six innings. He walked nearly three guys per game. He given up five hits with five Ks and two runs. Like, it's not horrible, but it's just not great. It's not what you come to expect for a guy that's supposed to be your ace of your staff. He's just been totally meh. he's given up a lot of good contact. His barrel rate, twice the career norm. The exit velocity is the highest in his career outside of his rookie season. How do you feel about Giolito?
Yeah, so I was looking at – I was trying to see if – because he's been so inconsistent over his career, I was trying to see if the stats, like the metrics for him this season, matched with any other season. And they don't really. Some are more in line with the, I think, 2018, where he had like a 6 ERA. Yeah. And was striking out six batters per nine innings. And then some line up with 2019, where he jumped up to like 12 strikeouts per nine, had mid 3 ERA. But he's just kind of like hard to peg as a, you know, what pitcher he is. What is he going to be this year? You know, a lot of people drafted him as an ace, and he'll probably give you ace strikeout numbers. I don't know if he's going to give you ace ERA, but to me, that's something you had to factor in going into the season. You know, he's not a 2 ERA type pitcher. He does walk people. And one thing that I found is that he's not throwing his curveball at all this year. And I'm curious if that is a decision that the pitching staff is making. Is that him? Because that might be the thing that's affecting him here. That might be driving down strikeouts, and the fact that his contact, you know, he's giving up a lot of good contact, maybe because he's not throwing this breaking pitch, it's driving up the contact number. So
yeah, that deserves further research for sure. Like, what is he using in to like supplement that? You know, it that's interesting, big time.
Yeah, I think you gotta wait and see a little bit longer with him. But if he's still struggling in a month, he's one of those guys where I might be looking to find a trade partner.
Yeah.
Another pitcher who a lot of people drafted really high, anticipating a really good season, was Luis Castillo. There are some major issues here. He's had between a 9 and 11 strikeouts per nine in three of his 4 years in the majors. And he's got a 6.95 strikeout per nine this season and a 6.42 ERA. And that's all despite the second best walk rate of his career. And he has a 357 BABIP, which is bad luck for pitchers. Now, the team is fielding in the middle of the pack. So one thing that can drive the BABIP for a pitcher is having a good or a bad defense. But that's not the case here. The left on base, his left on base percentage of 54%, that's the worst of his career. The hard hit, exit velocity, launch angle, barrel rates are not abnormal for him. So it's not like he's giving up way more hard contact than usual. I looked into his StatCast numbers. The spin rate has improved So that's not an issue. But like, what is going on here? It might be velocity driven. He's lost 1 to 2 miles per hour on all of his pitches. He's throwing his changeup and fastball more. And both of those pitches are doing worse than last year. He's leaving his fastball and sinker out over the plate too much. His sinker is performing way, way worse than last season. He was giving up a 263 batting average against the changeup last year, or against the sinker last year. That's gone up to a 483 batting average against. So it's almost getting hit twice as much. His advanced ERA metrics, I think he's a mid four ERA pitcher. And I think this is probably closer to 2018 Luis Castillo. If you're in a 8-team league, I think you got to drop him. There's so much pitching out there in shallow leagues that I think you got to drop him in a deep league, anything like 10 team mixed and beyond. I think you hold on to him and play the matchups, maybe give him one more month. And if he's like still getting shellacked by like Pittsburgh, that's not good. And you might have to cut him loose then, but.
Yeah. It's crazy. Cause you know, this is a guy who everybody was so high on.
Yeah.
You know? So for really like the last 3 years, you know, the advanced metrics just make you feel like this is a budding stud, you know? And I'm sure many, many folks have been burned so far this year. There'll be some really tough separation anxiety probably for some people.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But I mean, the reality is this is just might be who he is, unfortunately. And sometimes, you know, the whole community is wrong about somebody. another guy worth talking about is Eugenio Suarez. I mean, to me, he's perhaps the most frustrating player to have drafted this year. This guy, he must really hate playing shortstop. I mean, we were all so happy that we would be getting that kind of production out of the shortstop. But then here comes this 35.5% K rate. He's only hit 20 balls hard in 123 at-bats. And that, to go along with his 174 BABIP, that kind of explains that a little bit. But there's almost no value in Suarez at the moment. I mean, almost in a very similar way with Castillo. Like, you might have to feel like you got to cut the cord here too.
Yeah, I think you gotta pull the trigger here and you gotta let him go. His BABIP has actually gone down each of the last 4 years, and it's a contact issue. It's not like he's just getting more and more unlucky, right? It's definitely a contact issue, and you can see it, right? The striking out a third of the time, not hitting the ball hard. Right. That's a problem. And for a guy who you expect to hit 40 home runs, this is super disappointing. And like you said, you're not going to get any value for him right now. Nobody's going to trade you for him. Right. Even for like you're not even going to get a relief pitcher. Right. So this is a guy you got to drop. There's shortstop is pretty deep this year. You can find guys out there definitely who are doing better than Suarez. We got two more for you here. Charlie Blackman, he was a better buy low candidate a week ago. He's definitely doing a bit better in the last week. His BABIP has been driving down his batting average, but his BABIP and his batting average are both improving now. Still suppressed though, 256 BABIP and 231 average. His career BABIP is 335. So you got to expect a rise there. He's got the best walk and strikeout rates of his career. Some of the best plate discipline metrics of his career. Some of the best StatCast metrics of his career. Barrel, hard hit, hard contact. But because the launch angle is a little bit down, his ground ball rate is going up and his home run to fly ball rate is down. But this is a really good hitter who's hitting into some bad luck. And fixing the launch angle, that's a definite way to fix the problem for him. This is a guy who I think you should totally be buying. I think we're going to talk a little bit more about him maybe.
I fully agree about Blackman there. I mean, you know, there ageism is a real thing in fantasy sports too. So I feel like acquiring Blackman won't be really that difficult. So I'd push for him big time. Let's talk about Kyle Hendricks. He's been up, he's been down and up and down and up and down. He looked great against the slumping Dodgers, but he got shelled by Atlanta twice. He pitched poorly against the lowly Pirates twice. And then he took care of business against the Brewers, who've been pretty darn good twice. The walks are up. The Ks are down. The line drives are up. The ground balls are down. The barrels are way up. And the launch angle is down. I'm going to hang in there with Hendricks. You got to give the man some more time. Just don't start him against Atlanta.
Yeah, he's definitely a matchup play, but it's really weird, like, that, you know, the matchups that you thought would be bad matchups for him have actually turned out pretty well. And vice versa. But I, you know, he was already not a high strikeout guy.
Yeah.
And so that's always something that worries me, is these pitch to contact guys. But yeah, he's definitely a matchup play for me right now. He's not a set it and forget it guy until he shows that he can be consistent again. But you know, he's been a good pitcher for years, so we'll see if he turns it around. So hopefully that gave some guidance to how to handle some of these guys. It's always hard to know when to cut loose or hold on to these guys. It's hard to make a call on players who traditionally do very well or are high draft picks. So right now we're going to look ahead into the next week and go over a few streaming pitchers.
Am I streaming?
If you're looking for some pitching help this week, here are a few places you can look. There are lots of Sunday options. You got McCullers versus Texas, Singer versus the White Sox. Those guys are probably only available in shallower leagues. Some deeper Sunday options, Alzolay versus Detroit and Cease versus Kansas City. I would try to get them in the order that I gave them to you. McCullers, Singer, Alzolay, Cease. I also like Andrew Heaney next week, Wednesday versus Cleveland.
Yeah, I like Heaney a lot too. Then I've got a suggestion here. It's a little off the wall, particularly because he just got absolutely blasted by the White Sox on Saturday. But the young kid named Daniel Lynch, he's a guy to keep your eye on. He worked to clean up some of his mechanics between starts after allowing 8 runs in 2/3 of an inning against the White Sox on Saturday. But he only threw 34 pitches, so the Royals, they're cool with moving him up a day to avoid facing Chicago once again, which is really good for his psyche. He's facing Detroit, so it should be a decent chance to right the ship. With that said, don't start him. This is just a guy that you want to sit back and see if he can figure it out.
And so to wrap up here, we want to look at a few players in particular who are excellent buy low and sell high candidates. So let's do that. So we've got a few buy low candidates for you. One guy who I like that is not doing so well right now, but I think could be doing really well, is Kyle Tucker. He flashed 2020 and 30-30 potential in the minors. That's 20 home runs, 20 steals. He's got 4 major league seasons under his belt, 489 plate appearances. And during that time, he's got 18 home runs and 16 stolen bases, which kind of shows you that 2020, 30-30 potential is still there. Right now, he's got a 187 BABIP versus a 256 career BABIP. And that's definitely keeping the batting average down around 190 right now. Discipline hasn't been an issue for him. He's got the second lowest strikeout rate of his career at 19%. He's got an 80% contact rate and a 10% swing and strike rate. And those metrics are similar to Freddie Freeman, Trevor Story, and Aaron Judge, all of whom have lower overall contact percent than him. So that's kind of interesting there. He's got the second best exit velocity, max exit velocity, barrel rate, hard hit rate of his career. And a few sabermetrics here, his expected batting average, expected slugging, and expected WOBA are all way higher than his current standard numbers, which show that improvement is coming. He's got a 15% soft contact rate. That's already shifting to more medium and hard contact rate, and I would expect that to continue. There are lots of similarities here to 2019, where he had a 269 batting average. You're buying potential here when you buy Kyle Tucker. He might not put it all together this season, but he's definitely going to improve. And for me, a sell high guy here is Carlos Rodon. Right now is the time to sell. You're going to get the best return for him right now. He's got 12 strikeouts per nine and a 0.72 ERA. Now he's made some adjustments. He's added a curveball, which right now has a 100% swing and miss rate. He's added velocity to his fastball, slider, and changeup. But there are definitely problems here. He's got a higher expected batting average, expected WOBA, expected slugging than his standard versions. He's got a low BABIP, which is definitely luck related, not defense related, because Chicago White Sox is one of the worst fielding teams. He's had a really easy schedule. He's played Cleveland two times, Seattle and Detroit, and the 5% home run to fly ball rate is way low. He still has a chance, I think, of being a top 25 or a top 30 starting pitcher, but I think you could get a return for him right now as if he was top 15 or so. We'll be back next Wednesday with more fantasy baseball info for you. We'll be talking about all the big news of the week ahead, so make sure you've subscribed so you're notified when new episodes publish. If you want to get more info from me, I'm currently writing baseball, fantasy baseball, and baseball betting articles for thegameday.com. So check out my articles there. I had a bunch of articles come out a couple months ago. I'm putting more articles out for them now. Thegameday.com is a great source for sports betting and fantasy news. So make sure you check it out, not just my articles, but all the articles there. Also check out creativesports2.com. That's the number two. I have a column there called Three Strikes, and I post there every Thursday. Then finally, please give the show a 5-star rating. Each high rating helps move this podcast up the list on all the podcast platforms when people search for fantasy baseball. So it's something that helps Matt and I out a lot. Follow the show on Instagram at Fastball Fantasy Baseball and on Twitter at Fastball Pod. Reach out, let me know you're listening. I'm interactive on social media. If you tweet me or email me at the show with drop or add trade questions, who to start and sit, pitchers that you might want to stream, just shoot the show a tweet, shoot us an email, and we'll reach out. So again, that's Fastball Pod on Twitter, Fastball Fantasy Baseball on Instagram, and Fastball Fantasy Baseball at gmail.com. On email. Thanks for listening.